we were playing games one night, and one of the moms came up, and I didn't happen to be winning at that moment. And she said, I know what the problem is. And I said, what's that? She said, you don't have your ball hat on. And apparently I always wear my ball hat when I'm playing out there. So I went over and got my ball hat, put my ball hat on. She was much happier now that I had my ball hat on, because I guess there was a tradition there, you know?
Is that what happened to somebody?
I guess so, man. At any rate, it was a... I felt it was a remarkable evening, out of all, a remarkable weekend. Out of all of the, I don't know how many times we've been up there, 20-some over the last 30-some years, this one may have been the sweetest, simply because of the relationships. And so if you're relatively new to Stony Brook and you're not yet connected in a spiritual way, much less in a functional, I know you and I care about your family kind of way, those retreats, you ought to put them on your calendar. Next time around, make it happen. And you know, I forgot. Y'all, Marcia, say something. Why was it for you? You were kind
of... I had so much fun. I think the best of it was, you know, if you don't know anybody and you want to get to know someone, I left there. I really did with 40 friends. Mm-hmm. I don't know them well, but I felt like everyone was willing to get to know you, wanted to get to know you. I wanted to get to know all them. It was really great. The teaching, you know... It was a really good weekend.
Good.
A lot of honesty, a lot of being real with one another.
BJ, what did you think?
Yeah. Big impression on me was, I don't know a lot of people at Stony Brook. I know through the years, I know people. In the oldies, I knew a little bit. But I brought my daughter. My daughter wanted to come, actually. And everybody, I am saying everybody. I was working in the kitchen or was somewhere else in the house. And people were sitting down all the way through the 3 days. There wasn't a time, unless she was on her phone, you know, just getting some rest from the communication. There wasn't a time somebody didn't come alongside and sit next to her. Huge impression on her. Huge impression. That's how these ladies are. Mm-hmm. Just amazing.
Yeah, the spiritual impact on her coming down the mountain was jaw-dropping. I just drove and listened. And this is Brandon's mom. So, yeah. It was pretty cool. Bottom line, you missed out. Anyway. Well, I have a video I want to show you. Everybody's got coffee? We're good? All right. My main man's back there because he knew I'd get frustrated if this stupid thing didn't come up right. So I want you to see this video before we have our... there should be a light switch right back behind you. Watch this video. So, what an introduction to our lesson today. We're going to talk about having margins of time. So let's turn the lights on so people don't think we're doing strange things in here. And thank you so much, Kevin. Appreciate it. Let's talk about time margins. We're in our series about margins, and we've come to a place where we want to talk about time. Apparently, the first sundial appeared in about 200 BC, and a guy by the name of Plautus wrote this. He said, the gods confounded the man who first found out how to distinguish hours. Confound him, too, who in this place set up a sundial to cut and hack my days so wretchedly into small portions. You know, we all have a problem in our modern culture. A guy by the name of Bob Green called it the twitching of America. We twitch. We twitch in reference to the way we're living. Another expression that I found that hits this one right on the head is it's like hyper-living. You know, we're skimming along the surface of life, and faster and faster and faster. We're late. We're late for a very important date. And it doesn't matter what it is. In our minds, it's a very important date, and we're late. there is a problem. And Gandhi said the more there is more to life than increasing the speed. But somehow we've gotten the message that more is always better. More stuff you can cram into an hour, more stuff you can cram into a day, more stuff you can accomplish or do is a good thing in our culture. And I, in this particular series of creating spiritual margins so that God has a place to work in our life, I'm absolutely convinced that this one is one of the biggest we've got to address. Now, part of it is we no longer live in an agrarian society. If you and I all lived on a farm, we would get up with the sun or just before it. We would do all the stuff that we needed to do during the day. And the moment the sun went down, activities would cease. I mean, until they invented the light bulb, when the sun went down, people stopped work. And then for, you know, 10, 11, 12 hours in some places, while the sun was down, there was an opportunity for all the other things in life. People and rest and meals and togetherness, etc. But as soon as we created a light bulb, now we have no natural divides. We can just keep going. And we've created a culture that somehow rewards and awards people when they get more done. But at what price? At what cost? Not only to those around us, which is huge. Watch your child's face when you're on hyperspeed. What do they look like? Get in the car, hurry, we gotta go. We're late, get in the car, get in the car. Do you got shoes? Where's your backpack? Wait a minute, get in the car, get in the car. We're late, where's his backpack? Where's his bat? He's gonna have his bat. Where's the ball? Where's the soccer ball? We need a soccer ball. Where's his shoes? The wrong shoes. Do you have socks? Where are your sister's socks? Let's go. Now look at your kid's face. They're gonna have this little bewildered socks. What are socks? An unhurried life does not equal a lazy life. And somehow we have that in our heads that a slower pace equals not good, not as good. And I confess to you, I'm one of the worst at this. I am an achiever by nature, and I'm a multitasker, and my brain does not stop, and it's on top of it, on top of, on top of, on top of. And somehow I've gotten this message that that is a good thing. And I know it is not. Spiritually, I know that. I just have to rein myself in with great regularity. So I'm teaching this lesson today primarily to myself and also to you. Let's start by looking at a passage in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Probably familiar to most of you, or at least part of it is. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Find the book of Proverbs and then you're there. A piece of this section, chapter 3, verses 1 to 8, is often, quoted at things like funerals or a death of a child or sad things, you know, indicating that there are seasons. But I want you to see all the seasons that are written in this passage. Solomon's writing now, and he says, there is a time for everything. Now stop right there. There is a time for everything. Do we have time for everything? No. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. There's a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. You know, if you just stop and think about that passage, it's smacking every one of us who are the multitasker, get-her-done kind of folk right between the eyes. Because he's bifurcating. He's saying there's a box for resting, a box for laughing, a box for productivity, a box for sadness, a box for being born, a box for being for mending or tearing or whatever. Colossians chapter 4 and verse number 5 says, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. What's he talking about? A time to be born. Make the most of that. A time to die. Make the most of that. In our culture, we are impatient with those who have lost a loved one, who are not bouncing back to their normal chipper self a week later. Well, if we took make the most of every opportunity, correlated that to Ecclesiastes 3, that there's a time to be born and a time to die, a time to mourn, make the most of every opportunity to mourn. Take your time mourning. Or any other season that's called out. Make the most of every opportunity. Make the most of every opportunity to laugh. To laugh. One of the reasons I love that weekend is it has a funny mix to it where there's this real serious, you know, crying over in the corner, appropriate something. And then over here, there's this knockdown, drag out, card game going, screaming and hollering and laughing and throwing things. That was me, by the way. Yeah, that was me. I mean, a time to make the most out of every opportunity. Even looking at that, even that reading that, it starts to have a measured rhythm to it. There's a time for this. Pause. There's a time for that. Pause. We overlay it. There's time for laughing, there's time for this, and all this. There's a time for this. And a time for that. Now, the obvious thing that you ought to start thinking is, in order to live like that, we have to put some disciplines in place. We have to take control of how we spend time. And instead of letting someone else dictate to us how we spend time. That's our punchline when we get to the end. Now, I put in your notes that we all need, and I'm just trying to replicate what Solomon's talking about. We need time. We need personal time. Now, the joke is, if you're a mother of young children, you know, you can't even go to the bathroom by yourself. You know, the videos and the cartoons of the kids, you know, stomping on the dirt, smacking on the door, trying to get in, you know, or coming in while you're there and your kids get out of here. You don't even have time to go to the restroom by yourself. It is true. But there is a desperate need for personal time. Now, in different seasons of life, the ages of your children, the demands of your lives, whether you're working outside of the home full time or you're not, you're working in the home, you're part-time this or that, those seasons will reflect the way you get your personal time. But without personal time, we run dry. We got nothing left to give. We got nothing left to give our spouses. We got nothing left to give our kids. We got nothing left to give our friends or our family. Personal time, taking personal time, is not a nana. It's an important piece. A cup of tea on the porch by yourself. That's not laziness. That's investing time in something that has to happen. Personal time. And everybody enjoys that differently. For some, it's music. Louder the better. Others, it's no sounds. Others, it's early in the morning. Some, it's late in the evening. Some, it's in the middle of the day. Some it has to do with other people, and some it's all alone. It doesn't matter, but if you don't have personal time that's devoted to your development, spiritually and otherwise, then you're imbalanced. Now, our culture tends to do pretty good on the personal time. You know, we rack up hours in the gym. We rack up hours with our friends at Starbucks. So that one's not usually the one that's our biggest problem. Let's keep going. Family time. I love when I'm around Stony Brook families that understand how critically important that is, that they guard it. I mean, like, guard it. Like armed guards guard it. I think I mentioned to you when I was at the conference up in Yosemite a couple weeks ago, one of the guys said, in his life, when he walks through the door at night, the first 30 minutes are his children's. And I've got to thinking about how that would be if you, when you picked your kids up for school, for example, if when you drove home, the first 30 minutes was just you and your kids. No homework, no snacks, no nothing. Just you go sit in the middle of the floor. Out come the Legos or whatever's appropriate to your kids' age. They talk, they don't talk. You know one that won't talk unless they're doing something, so go do something with them, whatever that is. You know, 30 minutes invested in your kids. Not distracted, not cooking dinner, not running them to a soccer game, but just time with family. That includes your spouse, guys. If you spend more time in the gym than you do with your spouse, your life is totally out of kilter. Sorry. You say, well, how am I supposed to? He works and I work and the kids. I don't know. Work it out. You figured out how to get to the gym. Think about that a second. We figure out how to get to the gym, but we don't figure out how to spend any time with our spouses. Figure it out. It's critical. Time to share. Sharing time, you know, with friends or next door neighbors or people that have children similar age. Look at your monthly calendar. Is there any sharing time in there when Aunt and Uncle Frank or Uncle Frank and Aunt Susie come over to the house or the next door neighbors, we do our barbecue or friends from church, we stop after church and have lunch together. Where's the sharing stuff? Really, really an important part. Work is very important. Whether you're gainfully employed, like someone's paying you to work, or you're just killing yourself at home, or you're on the retired end of things and you're filling it full of meaningful volunteering and helping stuff, work is still a good thing to do, of all kinds. Sitting around watching television or Facebooking or some other form of social network by the hour is not a good use of time. A little bit here, a little bit there, sure, fine, why not? But there needs to be work, meaningful work. Regardless of the season of your life. What about playtime? Do you have some playtime? You know, where you laugh? You do something that's fun? And for everybody, it's different. You know, what's fun for you? What makes you laugh? What makes you giggle? What brings the inner child out of you, to use the psychology stuff? Where do you look like a kid? What environment does just pure fun, play. One of our problems is our kids are not playing enough. And they're learning from us. So we need to play. You play with your kids? You know? The dumb stuff they want to do. I mean, how many games of Candyland can you play in your life? A lot. A lot. You know? The silly videos that they like with their when they're younger. How many of those can you... I mean, I could sing Donut Man now if I had to. Every song on his 8-track or whatever it was. No, I guess it was a cassette at that point. You know, a sense of play. A play with adults. Do you have some friends that you like to play with? Is there a couple that you don't have to book out, you know, 7 months in advance and have a dinner reservation at the nicest place in Orange County? Can you call them up at 5:15 and say, throw the casserole in the fridge, let's go have pizza? Playing is important. And then, of course, the obvious one, time for God. Look at Psalm 46. Psalm 46. And I'm so tired, I'm going the wrong way in my Bible to find Psalms. Someone please help me. Don't you like the bags under my eyes? I'm a little old for these weekends, I'm telling you right now. And I get to take the kids to Sacramento day after tomorrow. Yeah!
Let's just plan the timing better.
Okay. Come Saturday, come to my house. I will need reviving. Psalm 46, verse 10. 46, verse 10. He says, "Be still and know that I am God. I'll be exalted among the nations. I'll be exalted in all the earth. Be still and know that I am God." Be still. That requires actual sitting with your Bible, the distractions turned off, and you are still before Him. We all need all this. Personal time, family time, sharing time, work time, play time, and of course time for the Lord. Now time is a commodity. It's a thing. The problem is we all have exactly the same amount. We don't think we do, but we do. Every single day, God meters out 24 hours. However many minutes that is, and however many seconds. I got that same amount, you got that same amount. We got 24 hours in a day. The problem is that if we are not living according to our priorities and living according to our biblically based commitments, then what usually happens is what I called in your notes, casual loud marauders demand attention and steal our time. It's almost like it's gold. We have it in little pouches on our belt. And if we're not careful, those 24 precious hours that we get every single day get stolen by the loudest marauder in our lives. Now, I want to take a second and ask you, what are the marauders that steal hours in your life? You understand what I'm saying? These are the things that while we might be well-intended, they come along, they get really loud, and they demand their way. And then they get it. Give me some examples. What's that?
Cleaning.
Cleaning. Okay, we don't all want to live in filth, but cleaning could be a marauder, absolutely. If you're one of those that can't rest until there's order around you, I am one of those. When I'm sick and I go home and I want to lay down and try to die, the first thing I do is arrange my room. You know, if I'm going to go have surgery, like my knee surgeries and stuff, the week before, I am just, you know, nesting, fixing, pushing, new light bulbs. I get it all ready. Okay, that is a stealer. That is a marauder making noise, grabbing time. What else?
TV.
Television.
The Hallmark Channel is awesome.
Hallmark Channel.
I love it.
Okay.
Amen. Facebook.
Got an amen over there. Probably wouldn't be mine, Pam, but I understand. What would you say?
Facebook.
Social media. Isn't that a marauder?
Yeah.
It's in your pocket. You're sitting somewhere. You got 13 seconds. What do?
How about the little slideshows that
pop up? Oh, those slideshows. You hit Facebook. Anybody post anything new? Cute cartoons. YouTube's here, YouTube's there. Yeah, they're loud, they're obnoxious. Those 13 seconds when you could have done this, no, this is what we do. You're right. What else? Loud marauder.
Sports.
Oh, fine, go meddling now. Yeah. Yeah. If it's out of control, for sure. What else?
Reading can be one.
Yes.
I get into a book, I don't want
to. Don't want to come out. Well, I understand that too. How about children? Sweet little darling marauders that they are. I mean, you know, you got them situated, and you got a moment, and, you know, you made yourself your cup of tea, and they have theirs. You got it all. That's really good. One of them elbows over the milk, and, you know, whatever. It happens. Stealing your time. What else? Where's another marauder? Yeah.
Kids' homework.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Homework can be a marauder. I tell every parent that ever comes to see me about homework, there is no scenario where a child should spend more than an hour a day doing their homework. None whatsoever. So see me if you are, because something's wrong. And you and your teacher need to get together and get on the same page. I absolutely agree with that. So see me, Jen, if you spend more than an hour. I want to talk. Somebody else?
Socializing.
Yeah, getting on the phone, yabber, 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 for sure, yeah.
Just driving around.
Taxi service.
Always call it shuffle.
Shuffle. What's behind the problem of the shuffle? Let's take it one more step beyond the shuffle.
Kids are too busy. Yeah.
Too many things.
Too many things. Commitments.
Too much stuff. Parents don't like to hear it, but this is my advice again. I don't think a kid should be involved in more than one thing at a time. So if they're doing soccer, great. We're doing soccer now. When soccer runs out, you want one more thing? Great. We can go to baseball then. But we're not doing baseball on top of soccer, on top of. You say, but it's what he loves. I get that, but it has an impact. It has an impact on the family. It has an impact on their siblings. It has an impact on you. It has an impact on how you run your home from 3 o'clock in the afternoon until 9 o'clock in the evening. It does. So it has to be controlled. What else? Where's the more marauders? Yeah.
My husband, he's very loud.
Very loud. So absolutely, I mean your spouse is an opposite mate to you, and what rhythm of their life doesn't really merge or merge yeah, do this. Merge with the rhythm of your life or yeah, absolutely. And then you got to figure it out. You got to figure some way out of that. Any other marauders?
I think sometimes being in service, even in your church, I've known people who can get so involved that they're ignoring their family and they're ignoring.
Yep.
Ministry. Absolutely. So much attention on service opportunities, which are a part of our lives and should be there. Get out of control, and they are no longer in their proper role. They're taking time away from, again, that precious time from 3 to 9 every day. That time period has to be controlled. It has to be disciplined. You have to, you know, establish it on the basis of priorities and limit commitments, including good ones. We're going to get to that in a second. I absolutely agree with that. So you see my point, though. While there is a time for this and a time for that and a time for this, something or someone is going to come along and start with a big detour sign to try to get you off kilter. And what has to happen is we have to be the controllers. In Ephesians 5, verse 6, it says, let no one deceive you with empty words. This is the marauder. You know, this is the person who comes along and says, turn left. And you should be saying, no, we're not turning left. And another passage that helps you is in Psalm 90, verse 12. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. If we only get X number of days or X number of hours in a day, there should be an intentionality to the dispensing of those hours or those days. You know, when you're 16 years old, you think you're going to live forever. When you get to 66 years old, it dawns on you, I'm probably 2/3 done, at least. When we have an attitude of saying to the Lord, teach me to number my days, then we're controlling the rhythm of the gift of life. Now, there are some things we don't control. You know, obviously, a lot of things we don't control. We don't control health all the time. We don't control this or that or the other thing. But to the extent we can control, that's the important part. So how do we do that? Well, I think the first and most important thing is that we make a schedule or a calendar and we stick to it. I don't care if you're 75 years of age and have been retired for 25 years, you should have a schedule. Some kind of a rhythm to your day, a rhythm to your week. Now, we're going to talk a lot about creating margins where new and interesting things can come in, but there needs to be a controlling, again, that's not a good enough word, because that implies you actually control it, an overseeing, that's a better word, of a calendar or a schedule, something that is going to allow you to number your days, to have some sense of making most of every opportunity. So I put down on your notes, ask the Lord to be the Lord of your schedule. You want him to be the Lord of your life? Ask him to be the Lord of your schedule. All right, Lord, I've got 24 hours today. How do you want me to use them? Lord, I've got 7 days this week, it looks like, unless you take me home. What am I supposed to do with those 7 days? I've got, 18 years with my children, plus or minus. How am I supposed to spend those 18 years? You ask the Lord to be the Lord of your schedule, the Lord of that part of the resources that he's going to give you. And then you start, when you're working on this schedule, this calendar, you start with the non-negotiables. If you're working outside of the home and that income is necessary for your livelihood, well, that's a non-negotiable. We got to work, otherwise we don't eat. Okay, then that goes into your schedule. From my perspective, church is a non-negotiable. So it's got to go in. And it's not, well, unless the kids have soccer. As far as I'm concerned, church is a non-negotiable. You say, well, then they wouldn't be able to play X. Life is hard, and then you die. Meaning, there are thousands of other expressions for children in South County that have to do with sports and all the other things that cry at our kids. Surely we can find something so a non-negotiable can be maintained. So a school for a kid that, he's 20 years old and he's enrolled in college, school is non-negotiable. Got to go to class. Your young kids that are here, that's non-negotiable. From 8:30 in the morning till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they're supposed to be in school. So you start with that. If you are and I put it in your notes this way, the chief driver, cook, and bottle washer, then you're really trying to get some semblance of overseeing of your children's schedules too. So what I would do is take one of those, and there's thousands of them on the internet, print off one that works a week at a time, and I'd use a blue pen for Johnny and a pink pen for Susie, because they have expectations, their little soccer practice or school or whatever, and I'd color code, because it's not just you as an individual, you're a reflection of your children's schedules too. So go ahead and put that down. Then consider those rhythms we talked about a week or two ago. Some of you are morning people. Some of you are nighttime people. There's a rhythm to life. If you're on the retired end of things, there's a rhythm to that. If there's a health issue for you, there's a rhythm that comes out of that. If your spouse travels, there's a rhythm. Now, if your spouse is gone Monday through Thursday, your Monday through Thursday looks different, or it sure as heck should, than your Friday through Sunday. Right? Because those priorities that need to be applied to him and his life, his relationship with his children, his relationship with you, his involvement with the home, it has to be shifted. So there are rhythms to life. Consider your rhythms wherever you are in life. And then you start to add the want-tos. Now, guys, we haven't added a single kids' plaything, a single outside activity for you yet. We've done the non-negotiables. We've done the things that have to do with the others in our lives. We've considered our rhythms, and now we're ready to do a few want-tos. If you start with we gotta's, you'll never have a measure of time. You'll never be reflective about time. You'll just be responding to time. Well, we gotta get the soccer. We gotta. All the kids in his class are playing. Da-da. We gotta. No, you don't. No, you do not. First off, he may hate it. That may not be his thing. So don't imply that just because the other kids are doing it that he should do it. If your kid's a reader and hates sports, so what? Now, it's going to be a little hard on them when they get to junior high. So, you know, buckle up. It's going to be a tough couple of years, because if you're not a jock in junior high, you're at the low end of the totem pole. But so what? Start parenting in a way that recognizes that. You know? Add the want to's. Then plan for free time. This is when you get the red pen out. The red pen. Okay. They come home from school, 3:30, we're home, 3:45. Want to spend those first 30 minutes with my kids, so 3:45 to 4:15, nothing is scheduled. And so in anticipation of that, the snack is already in the refrigerator. All you do is open the Tupperware. There's no preparation, so you can get your full 30 minutes. So you know, now we're to 4:15. Start dinner. No, wait a minute. Give me 15 minutes for transition to make sure everybody's got their homework going. 15 minutes, that'd be a good time for me to have my iced tea in the evening. You build in marginal time. You build in 15 minutes. If you're the one that's screaming in that parking lot every morning at 8:29 and a half, you need to build in 15 minutes to your schedule in the morning. We are going to leave 15 minutes earlier. When I know that I need to be somewhere at such and such a time, and I know it takes me 15 minutes to get there, I add 10 to 15 minutes on the front end, and that's when I try to walk out the door. Because I'm a time Nazi. I just really am. But that 15 minutes might give you time to find that lost shoe. Or the day the garage door won't go up, and you have to remember, oh, there's a manual way to do this. What is that? Oh, you pulled that thing. Oh, yeah, that's right. You get a little time to do that. So you build in free time. So we're keeping coming down. Now we're going to reevaluate our priorities because it's too stinking full. You know, so you're looking, here's a red line for that kid and a blue line for that kid and a purple line for that kid and a green line for that kid. And how in heaven's name? It doesn't work. So you reevaluate your priorities. If you're not in the season with young children and you're not being the, you know, chief Uber driver, maybe you look at the things like your volunteerism, your service at church. I'm out Tuesday night, I'm out Wednesday night, I'm out Thursday night, and Friday morning night. Can a person be in too many Bible studies? Yes, don't drop this one. But yes. Absolutely. So reevaluate your priorities. In our culture, I hate to say this, and I don't want to look at anybody while I say it, but the too stinking much time on our physical appearance and or our physical bodies. I think about the amount of time that's spent in gyms and in pursuit of our physical care, which is important and which I am awful at, but there is a preponderance in our culture to go crazy with that. You know, 4 hours a week, 5 hours a week, 6 hours a week in a gym. Well, did you spend 6 hours a week in His Word? So look at that. Reevaluate your priorities if necessary. Maybe include your spouse or your kids in the planning session. You know, if they're real little, it's hard, of course. But if they're a little bit older, you know, ask them, how does it feel? Do you feel like you have enough time in the evening, you know, to do just what, you know, maybe you might want to do? And if they go, no, Mommy, we don't have any time. Let them evaluate it. How does it feel to eat dinner in the back of the van 3 nights a week because we have to be at this practice, that practice, that practice? You know, the van was never meant to be the family's place to eat. So maybe your spouse. You say, oh, he'll cut me to shreds. He might, but it might be a good, you know, objective set of eyes. Honey, you look a little ragged here. So no wonder, you know, you're this or that on the patient scale. Or have somebody hold you accountable. Look at them and say, you know, as I've done this, as I've looked at our schedule, I've looked at mine, I've looked at my kids, I've looked at my husband's, I've considered the rhythm of the home, I've considered where I'm at in life and all those things, and I'm still feeling like I'm just chasing my tail, that time controls me, I don't control it. Let someone speak to you about that. Let someone speak into your life about it. Let them say, well, sweetie, the 6 hours you're spending in the gym, maybe you could break that up. Or the 12 hours you're spending serving at the church, maybe you could cut that back. If you allow someone that you trust that has good intentions in your life to give you a little bit of whatever, and then maybe hold you accountable. Well, shift your priority here, shift your priority there. I think you'll find a few more margins. And then invite them next week to come back and look at your face and see how haggard you are, and speak into your scheduling again. Having someone hold you accountable is an amazing thing, guys. And then at the end of each day, look over your schedule and be prepared for tomorrow's activities. It's amazing how easier my morning goes when I lay out my whatever the night before. If I'm chasing around trying to find my car keys while I'm trying to get out the door, it adds an element of pressure. It does. There's a, where's my keys? Now, I happen to be an incredible creature of habit. My keys always go in the same place. That's my nature. I'm at that end of the spectrum. Others are at the other end of the spectrum. But if you do a little planning, even for your kids, you know, the shoe thing, make them responsible to put the shoes by the door. Or at the end of the evening, before everybody goes up to go to bed, you say, are we ready for in the morning? And the translation of that is your backpack by the back door? Are your shoes by the back door? If it's going to rain, do we have boots out? Do we have jackets out? Because it takes away that knockdown, drag out when you're trying to get out the door, when they can't find their backpack and they can't find their shoes and they can't find their whatever. For me, at my stage of life, because mine doesn't involve anybody but me, it's a matter of taking out my calendar in the night before and go, okay, got 3 appointments tomorrow. Yeah, I'm going to need, yeah, I got that. Yeah, I need, yeah, I got that. Yeah, I'm going to grab that other book. Yeah, that's good. All right, I'm good. And when I get up in the morning, I'm mentally prepared for what's coming. So reviewing your schedule and being prepared. And then after about a 3-week period of time, sit down again and reevaluate. Because you're going to come up with really good intentions to begin with. This perfect little plan. And it ain't going to be perfect. So about 3 weeks, you need about 3 weeks to set new habits. So at about a 3-week period of time, you sit back down and you go, okay, what needs to be adjusted? That wasn't working. That 20-minute period that I thought would work for a little transition from this to this, no way. Needed 40. My kids just don't move that quickly. You know? So readjust. But by doing that, you're saying, wait a minute, I want to be the Lord of my calendar. Not personally, I'd like the Lord to be the Lord of it. But as a manipulator of it, I want to have some measure of control over my life, my schedule, my use of time. I do not want those marauders to just keep grabbing everything that they will. Okay. I had to put in here, though, that the making of plans is a good thing, but remember who controls it all. You know, Proverbs 16, verse 9 says, in their hearts human plan their course, but it's the Lord that establishes their steps. My problem is I don't give him room to establish him. You know? Proverbs 21, verse 5 says, the plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. So having plans is a good thing. Just remember who's the Lord of the plans. And when he obviously was messing with you, just grin and go with it. All right, some practical suggestions. Number one, learn to say no. I was so proud of myself last week. My pastor's got some brilliant ideas for how he thinks I should be busy in my next season of life. And I think between him and the pastor and his wife, they have made, I don't know, 9 to 12 suggestions about certain things that I should be involved in. And he had a really, really good one that I really, really, really wanted to do in this next month. But I'd already said yes to two. And my calendar has been crazy, crazy since January 1st. And I wanted to do this so badly. I was teaching a bunch of college kids. Oh, gee, golly, God, I wanted to do it. But to do it would have been, I mean, insane. I mean, I'm to the ridiculous stage, so it would have been insane. And so I was I had his email, and I could do it. I want. It's almost how it was too. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous. And I finally sent him a note and said, "I'm sorry. I think I'm going to have to say no. I can't do that." Afterwards, I felt so good. I was so proud of myself. I said no to me. Sometimes saying no is to me, to yourself. Sometimes it's to a friend. Sometimes it's to your children. Sometimes it's to your spouse. Sometimes it's to a work commitment. That's wonderful. That would have been cool. That would have been a nice advancement. But no. Learning how to say no. You know, I know nothing about raising flowers. My friend Donna Malaza back here is the rose queen of the world. But I've told this story many times. When I was in seminary up at Biola, outside of our classrooms, not too far away, was this walkway. And this walkway had rose bushes down it. And during the time that I was in seminary, when we'd be between classes, I would bolt out there and stick my nose in one of those roses. I just loved the smell. It's not visual for me, it's smell. So I'd stick my nose in a rose for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'd be all ready to go back into class and do whatever. So one day I went out there with anticipating my rose smell break, and they were gone. And in their stead was these little stubby things just sticking out of the ground, you know, about the yo high. And I'm looking around, I mean, really upset. What happened to my roses? And one guy was driving around in one of those little carts, one of the maintenance guys, and I stopped him. And I said, hey, what happened to the roses? And he gave me that look. You can imagine what it looked like. And he said, well, ma'am, we prune the roses this time of the year. And I said, well, will they come back? And he goes, oh, yes, just give them. And he told me how many months. And lo and behold, the man was right. Okay, so I know nothing. But I knew enough to wait and wait and wait, and here came my roses back, and next semester I could stick my nose in them again. There is a pruning process to producing really good roses. Well, there is a pruning process in helping us to have a balanced life. So learn to say no. Mom, can I go over to Freddie's house? No. That's Friday night. Friday night's family night, and you already chose Candyland, and we can't wait to play. No. Or, no, it's family night, and Johnny chose we're doing Legos. I don't like Legos. It was Johnny's turn to choose, and we're going to have fun doing Legos. Learn to say no. Say no to your kids. Say no to your spouse. Say no to the next door neighbor. Say no to somebody calls you with an opportunity. Say no to church. Say no. Okay. Second one, expect the unexpected. Create those time margins. Give yourself 15 extra minutes to get X. Give yourself extra time to shop. You know, if you enjoy going through Costco and eating all that stuff that they stick out there, give yourself 30 extra minutes to do Costco. Why not? Why not? If you love the taste of some coffee or tea and there's a quiet place, there used to be a Barnes & Nobles down in at Oso, you know, down in that little, whatever it is where babies are and whatever. Yeah, was that a Borders? Whatever it was down there. And they had this little coffee shop in it. And so what I would do is I would tell the office, I have an appointment, I'll be back in about an hour and a half. And I would go down there, and I would get me a cup of coffee and get whatever the latest atlas was. I love reading atlases, I know, strange. And I would lay out a new atlas and my cup of coffee, and that was my hour and a half break once a week. No, you know, I got my phone on. If you need me, call me. That's all right. That's where I was. You need to do that. To build in some time margins. Travel time. If back and forth to school or back and forth to church is 20 minutes, give yourself 30. Go a whole lot. Give you 10 extra minutes. When you pull into the church parking lot, instead of that mad dash, give me your class, give me your class, get the cash, you go sign them in, I'll get the order. That will go away. 10 extra minutes? Amazing. You pull in, you find a parking spot, you walk up. All right, expect the unexpected. C, unplug. Turn off. Whatever it is that's your thing. Social media, TV, the radio. Or at least control them. At least control them. I've learned to turn off sports networks in my car and drive back and forth to school with nothing going on. And that 12 minutes have become very precious. It's like, Because I just turn the radio off. Do what you need to do, or at least control it. Turn it off if you can. Another one that's a practical idea is to practice simplicity. And I love this phrase, everything we own owns us. It's one of the reasons the weekend works. It's because you can't haul all your stuff up there. If you used 6 sizes of curling irons in the morning, I'm telling you, you may or may not find a plug that even works to use one. Right? You know, if it takes you 20 minutes to get your makeup on in the morning, up there, there's only one mirror. And there's 15 women in front of it. So they brushed their teeth and moved on. You know, simplicity. Everything we own owns us. Think about your kitchen. How many appliances do you have? And it clutters up everything, and you can't find it. If you only had one knife, you'd know where it was. If you had one good knife, you'd use it and put it back in the same drawer every time, and there'd be no frustration of trying to find the knife, because it's always right there, because I only have one. It's like a coffee mug. How many coffee mugs do we need? When Barb and I sold the big house and moved into the house we're in now, reluctantly, I think, she agreed to a plan, kind of, of whatever we're taking, if we get another one, we have to dump one. So if you get, you know, we got an X number of coffee mugs, that's now the inventory. And if you want a new coffee mug from wherever you're traveling, not a problem, but when you come back, one of those has got to go. You get a new pair of shoes? Great. One of them's got to go. You get a new blouse? Terrific. One of them's got to go. My big thing is sleeping in t-shirts, and I love t-shirts from where I travel. But I had to, okay, which one goes? Because I got a new t-shirt. It's just a little approach to making sure stuff doesn't own me. Now, you know, I don't know what your thing is, whether it's shoes or jewelry or who knows. We all have them. But do they own you or do you own them? You know? Simplicity. Pare it down. Go hit a closet. Go, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. I could not find anything in here if I needed it. So that means there's too much stuff. If you can't find it, you got too much. What's the parable in the New Testament of the guy who has more and more grain, and, you know, buys up more and more land? And what's his solution?
Build
bigger barns. Well, we build bigger barns. We just take over closets in the house. There's your closet, half of your husband's closet, the hall closet, the back half of the kid's closet out in the, you know, whatever. Come on. You're never going to wear that stuff anyway. Pare it down. Practice simplicity. Next one. Learn to separate technology from time. We keep thinking that time-saving devices are going to save us time. They do not. They do not. They just complicate it. So the TV wasn't working real good, so I identified down all this stuff, called Cox, whatever. So the suggestion is the clicker is not working. So we get a new clicker. We can't just turn TV on. Oh no, I have got to program this sucker. And I can't just figure it out by pushing buttons. I have to get this direction thing out. I'm not kidding you. The piece of paper went like this. Like 15 panels in it. 2 sides, 2 languages. I have to figure out which language is my better one. I start with panel number 1 and work my way through to get the stupid clicker to work to put channel 4 on.
You know, time. Hire someone.
You had to hire someone. Okay, you should have hired me. I was ready.
Hire someone.
You know, I remember this is so true, especially about me. The very first time Barb and I decided to do a vacation together, this is, oh my gosh, pushing 30 years ago, we decided to go to Hawaii. Somebody here at Stony Brook had a timeshare thing, and I got it from them in Kauai, and I just couldn't wait. And I invited Barb to go with me. We were good friends. We didn't know each other that well then. But she knew me very well. So we got on a plane. She had this carnivorous, and she still has one, every time we travel, this big carnivorous purse thingy. And it had all kinds of stuff in it, which I constantly make fun of her about.
Is this
but
tape?
No, wait. No, it's not tape. The punchline is against me, not you. We're sitting on the plane, and I'd been talking to her about this vacation. And I said, now, I've got the rental lined up. We're going to a da-da-da, and they're expecting us at such and such time. And then I've figured it out. It's about 13 minutes between the da-da, and they're expecting us about such and such time. And I know that I've got the phone number right here of the guy that we have to call, but we have to call him before 7 o'clock to get the key to da-da-da-da. And so I'm going on and on like that. And so she says to me, hey, Sherry, can I take a look at your watch for a second? It's so attractive. So I took my watch off. I've never been without a watch in my life. The only time it comes off is when I shower in the morning. I sleep with the thing. That's it. And so I said, you want to look at my watch? Sure. And she took my watch. She said, oh, that is nice. She opened that carnivorous thing and went, I want my watch. How could I possibly operate? She said, I think this is going to be a fun vacation, don't you? Maybe you're like me. You need to disconnect from a clock or a watch or a phone or the beepings of an alarm clock or an alarm disc. You know, we've got beepers. We've got notifications for everything. Really? All that is putting a little dagger in your heart every time that thing beeps, every time it notifies you about something. Now, I find if you lived in Oklahoma, it might be nice to know that a tornado was coming. I get that one. But short of that, do we need all those notifications, all those beep, 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 beeps in our life? We do not. Take your phone and turn it off. I mean, not down, off. Put it in a drawer for a period of time during the day. Go non-tech for a period of time. Separate technology from the use of your time. Another one is to work on a perspective for time. That time is not just click, 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 but a bigger perspective. That's one of the things that I got out of the weekend was, you know, 30 years ago when all these moms came up to that whatever, their prayer request, their focus was on their kids. If they were teenagers, what was going on, you know, whatever was going on in their marriage, whatever, very intense, whatever. Okay, now, 20 years later, a lot of stuff's happened. Their perspective has changed dramatically. The intensity of some of the stuff that they were riding the waves on. It's the business of getting a perspective on time. And I put in your notes to consider the dot versus the line concept. One of the writers that I know that's talked about eternity does it this way. You and I are in a dot. This is it. This is us right now. It's a dot. And we are all up in arms about that dot. About everything having to do with our kids and our lives and our marriages. And the intensity of that dot is unbelievable. But over here is a line that goes forever. That's God's perspective of time. We're going crazy on the dot. And we don't get the perspective of the line. It's one of the reasons why you ought to have older women in your life. Because they're getting a sense of the line. You're down here on the dot. And somebody maybe in their 60s or 70s or 80s or 90s is starting to get a better feel for that line. So one of the practical things is to work on having a longer perspective of time. I'm not just going to have my child till they're 16 or 18 or 20. Lord willing, we're going to have 50, 60 years together. It takes away the intensity of that one decision, that one thing they're doing, that one activity. Work on a longer perspective of time. G says, fake yourself out. All right, so this is for people like me. You got to fake yourself out. You got to force yourself to look at time a little differently. And so here's some suggestions. One, purposefully stand in a long line at the store. Go find the longest one.
It's usually the faster one, too.
Yeah, it might turn out. Yeah, that's how mine works, too, Shannon. You say, well, why in heaven's name would you do that? Because. Go. Go, babe. No. I know you've got responsibilities. Meet the masters. But purposefully stand in a longer line at the store. Why would I suggest that that's a good thing to do? Because what does it mean if you have to stand in a longer line?
Patience.
Yeah, a little bit of patience. And you just bought yourself 3 extra minutes that are unclaimed. 3 extra minutes you don't have to feel guilty about. It's not my fault that they're slow up there. It's just, it gives you permission to stand still for 3 extra minutes. Sip the Diet Coke you got in your hand, or, you know, goochie goochie goo with your kid that's in the cart. You stole, you fake yourself out. You bought yourself 3 extra minutes. This is what I'm doing right now, is getting one line on the freeway. I got a 12-minute drive to work. And if I jockey, do my normal to get to work, there's a certain level of stress before I ever walk into my office. But if I get in that one lane, get on the freeway, and I sit in that lane all the way, it slows me down. I don't have any control. The trucks are in that lane. And I just... It has a remarkable difference on my attitude when I walk from the car to the school. Park on the other side of the parking lot. You pull up to the store instead of the closest, because I got to get in there and get out. Look around, find the one that's the furthest away, and go park in it. Fake yourself out. That extra 4 minutes that it takes you to walk into the store, you just bought yourself 4 minutes that you didn't think you had. So sometimes you got to fake yourself out. I used to have a friend that would put all kinds of things in their calendar because their secretary kind of controlled their world. And he put funny little appointments in there all the time. They weren't real people. He was faking himself out. And he'd get to that appointment and go, oh, yeah, got an appointment with Bill. It's kind of like my running down to the bookstore. It's kind of like that. You know, and the door was closed, and he had 15 minutes. Because, yeah, he's got an appointment with Bill. He didn't have an appointment with Bill. He's faking himself out. Anyway, that's practice succession. And I want to give you one last one. And this one is practice the Sabbath. You know that the Ten Commandments are in two places, one in Deuteronomy and one in Exodus. And the one in Exodus is in Exodus chapter 20. And in Exodus chapter 20, one of the Ten Commandments, and I'm personally convinced that this is probably the one that's been violated the most over the centuries, is the one in verse number 9. Is it 8 or 9? 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. The word holy means set aside, separate. One of the practical suggestions for us as it relates to building margins of time is to recognize there is a spiritual commandment. Yes, we're no longer under the law. I understand that as a New Testament believer. But it is still an incredible guideline for life. We don't get to say, well, it says do not murder, but we can murder now because we're in the New Testament. Any more than we can say that Sabbath doesn't apply. It does apply. It's different, but it applies in the sense that there needs to be a day that is set aside, that is pulled aside, and it does not have the same pattern and the same rhythm and the same demands as the other days of the week. One of the reasons our health as a nation, and certainly in South County, is impacted is because we do not take Sabbath. So I would urge you to pick a day. Maybe your day is Saturday, and if your husband works on this day or that day or that day, pick another day. But have a Sabbath day where there is not the normal rhythm and running that there is on the other 6 days of the week. Sunday's a perfect one because you're going to get up and you're going to go to church, and then you have the day. Don't fill it with 12 other things. Let it just be quiet. Now, you don't have to go as far as a dear friend I used to have. I mean, they came home from church. There was no television on. Her husband used to hate it because of, you know, football's on Sunday. There was no television on. The kids could not go to anyone else's house. They had a nice dinner together. They played games together. They had quiet time. She had music things for them to listen to. There was a quiet afternoon and a quiet evening in their home. You may not have to go to that extreme, but just cut all the nonsense out. Have a Sabbath. So bottom line, prioritizing time with the Lord is the understanding that speed does not yield devotion. Just because we can do 3 things at once doesn't mean we should. We pay a price. Emotionally, psychologically, we pay a physical price. The amount of people that are on blood pressure medicine is not even funny. And in large, to a large extent, it's because we're asking too much of our bodies. So, a margin, a time margin. Let it be a priority this week as you think it through. Let's pray. Father, we started with a little cartoon. I'm late for a very important date. The problem is we made everything important, and therefore we're late for everything. I pray that this week, individually, in each of our lives, we'll look at our schedules, we'll look at our lives, our patterns, our kids, the rhythm of our homes, our relationships, especially our relationships with you and then our relationship with our spouse, and move things around in a way that allows you to be Lord of our schedules. Create in us a desire to have time margins. I pray in Christ's name. Amen.